there are rules for policemen.
Yeah. That's what my captain keeps telling me.
Welcome to Franchise Fan Guys, where we are going to be talking about the Die Hard franchise. I'm Tom Breifogel, joined with Andy Schmidt and Skid Marr. How about you guys say hi?
Hey guys, I'm Andy Schmidt, and I died hard. I died hard watching these movies.
Hey, I'm Skid Marr, and we're doing a kid-friendly podcast this week. So all I'll say is yippee-ki-yay, Mr. Falcon. Franchise
Fan Guys. All right, so let's start this podcast by talking about each release, their budget, and how well they did, and what people thought about them. So we got Die Hard with a critic score of 94 and an audience score of 94. Domestic box office of $83 million with a budget of $28 million. Then Die Hard 2 with a critic score of 69 and audience score of 70. The domestic box office of $117 million with a budget of $70 million. Then we have Die Hard with a Vengeance, critic score of 60, audience score of 83, domestic box office of $100 million with a budget of $90 million. Then Live Free or Die Hard, critic score of 82, audience score of 86, domestic box office of $134 million with a budget of $110 million. Then the last one to be released is A Good Day to Die Hard, the critic score of 15, audience score of 40, domestic box office of $67 million, and a budget of $92 million. So what do those numbers say to you guys?
I was surprised that by a couple things. I was surprised that Die Hard 2 was received as well as it was, seemingly, in 1990, which I don't really remember to be the case. I'm surprised at how well financially they all did. I'm surprised at how poorly Die Hard with a Vengeance was received by the critics because, well, we'll get into that. And I'm also surprised at how well Live Free or Die Hard did critically and financially, and I'm not at all surprised at how poorly A Good Day to Die Hard did in every respect.
Yeah. Similarly, I was surprised at Live Free or Die Hard, but I think it's worth taking into account that one was PG-13 and not R. It's the only one that's PG-13, mm-hmm. which studios have figured out is the sweet spot for making money, because parents don't object to it as much. It was interesting to me because Die Hard and Die Hard 2, the critic and audience scores are about the same. 94 and 94 for Die Hard, and Die Hard 2 was 69 and 70 for the audience. And Die Hard with a Vengeance, critics dropped that to a 60, but audiences went up to an 83. And I think that makes sense. That's the one where, I mean, look, don't get me wrong, Die Hard 2 is more unrealistic than Die Hard 1, but with a Vengeance is even more unrealistic. There's less character involved. It's just more popcorn-y where, you know, and you start to see critics really start to peel off because you've got the critics that really want, you know, good filmmaking, or they want character development, they want all that sort of stuff. And then you've got the other, you know, a subset of critics that are totally cool with popcorn movies and will still give those a higher score, but they start to diverge at that point. So I think that one's a really interesting one to look at because I think that's sort of the, from the audience reception standpoint, that's where you start to see the split of kind of where it's really diverging from the first film. I think you can, that's actually on display in those numbers. And I also think that it's kind of interesting that Die Hard, even without inflation taken into account, still made the most amount of money. If you just take the domestic gross and subtract the production budget, at least from the numbers we were able to find, it actually made the most dollars, even not equating for inflation. And the other really interesting thing is that, and I think this speaks really well, obviously, of Die Hard 1, which we're not going to find any contradiction here. I don't think that's the best of the bunch, is it was never the number one movie. Neither mm-hmm. was Live Free or Die Hard. The two that made the most money were never the number one movie at the box office. But the first Die Hard spent 11 weeks in the top 10, 11 weekends in the top 10, and none of the others even came close to touching that. And again, that long tail, that longevity, which we've talked about before, is one of the signs of you really have something because audiences are talking about it, getting other people to see it, and going back to see it multiple times. So all of that sort of lends credence to the idea that Die Hard is a bona fide, legitimate hit, which doesn't surprise anyone because it spawned four sequels. But just looking at those numbers, you know, I just think that's really interesting to see that the numbers sort of bear out what I think we all kind of walked into this assuming. How about you, Tom? Were you surprised by anything?
By those numbers?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was surprised how high number two was rated. I think that's my least favorite. Two and five are my least favorite. I would have thought two would have been way lower, but that's just me watching it in 2021. I'm shocked, even though part five I really just didn't like, I'm shocked it lost $25 million. I would have thought it would at least have broke even.
It's really Sorry, bad, but... though.
It's really bad.
It's not good. So Live Free and Die Hard 4 and 5 are the only two that were released internationally, which really saved the last one because, it, like you said, domestically it lost money. But 78% of its intake came from overseas. So it actually it actually did quite well in the foreign market. It made $237 million. Die Hard 4 made $253. So it made more than five overseas. But yeah, that kind of saved its bacon because its worldwide gross was $304 million.
So both of you, how would you rank these best to worst?
Best, I think we'll probably all end up agreeing. Die Hard is amazing. It is a fantastic movie. One of the best, tightest screenplays that I think that for an action movie, certainly, that there's ever been. So that's the best. I think for me, Die Hard with a Vengeance would be second. I always like that one. And I have... Die Hard 2 is not a good movie, but I have a really intense sentimental attachment to it because it was playing in a movie theater that I was working at in high school. And so I ended up seeing it a lot, and I associated a lot with that summer, with my youth, and especially the closing credits song, the weather outside is frightful. Because I hear that song, that rendition of that song, and I smell that like popcorn and spilled soda smell, like we're getting ready to clean up the theater. And so I'm taken right back. So for that, I'll give it a number three. Number four, I'll give Live Free or Die Hard. It is better watching it than I remembered it being. I actually kind of enjoyed it watching this time. And then A Good Day to Die Hard is garbage.
What about you, Andy?
Yeah, I think I'd probably go similarly. Definitely Die Hard at the top. Then I think I'd do Vengeance. I'd probably put Die Hard 2 third. Similarly, because it just like that was a really fun summer. when that came out. Die Hard with a Vengeance surprised me at how much I enjoyed it, I think. And that movie has only grown on me since seeing it, which doesn't mean I don't see its flaws. I just forgive its flaws. And then I think I'd go Live Free or Die Hard, and then A Good Day to Die Hard last. I find Live Free or Die Hard to be a movie that I can watch, but I kind of enjoy it, but it's not great. It's watchable, and A Good Day to Die Hard I don't find watchable. That was painful. I don't know about you guys, like if you rewatch all of these like in fairly quick succession, but a friend of mine, Todd, came over and we watched all five of these together, and by the fifth one we were pretty much done like 15 minutes in. We had given up all hope on that.
I was the same. I was just like I couldn't keep watching it exclusively. I was just like,
yeah, man, this same sucks. With me.
Especially because for me, like, have you guys seen Chernobyl, the HBO series?
I haven't.
Oh yeah. Excellent series.
Phenomenal series. But having watched
Chernobyl recently enough, and then watching this movie that is partially set in Chernobyl made my skin crawl. Watching them do like action scenes around in that setting disgusted me. So that like made it so much harder to watch. It was just like I was answering emails mostly, but it as I could still tell, even have with one eye on it, it was terrible.
It was the last one I saw. I saw it like 8 hours ago, and I barely remember it.
I know. All I remember is Jai Courtney's fucking face, and I don't understand why he's in movies.
So
but
did you guys? That's just me. Did you guys? Because this makes a. I'm sure this makes a huge difference. Did you guys see the theatrical release or the like extended whatever cut of that fifth one?
Is an extended release?
Yeah. When I put in the Blu-ray, it gave me two options. And whatever option I chose, it was the wrong one. That's the only
one. Wow. It was definitely the theatrical. Fifth one was only an hour and a half, or an hour 38, which I think they all should be that short. But
yeah, that was exciting. That was very exciting to see that running time before starting it. I was very happy about that.
I think no one will agree with me. I'm going to do it. I'm going to go based off of not a legacy of just the most fun I had yesterday and the day before watching these. I'm putting Live Free or Die Hard first. Then wow. Die Hard.
Wow.
Then With a Vengeance. Then Die Hard 2. Then A Good Day to Die Hard.
Wow.
Let's just stop. Let's just stop.
Time out.
Time out.
I'm throwing the challenge flag on this one because
let's do it.
We have to go back to the tape. Literally, you have to rewatch these movies. I don't understand how you can put that movie first. I don't get it. Please explain your logic.
I'm not saying it's a better movie. I'm saying I had a better time watching it. I don't know.
All right.
Live Free or Die Hard. Also, going into Live Free or Die Hard, I had zero expectations. Three was kind of cool. With a Vengeance, I enjoyed, but three, I wish it was like a 45-minute film. Like, I got really, really bored. I was really in, and then I was like, oh, it's still going on. Another riddle. Like, they just keep happening. So four, I thought it was going to be horrible. I enjoyed four. I thought it was pretty good. One, I think I was expecting more. One, I did enjoy. One is the only one I had seen before a couple days ago. I saw it the first time 3 years ago, and it was talked up like it was going to be my favorite movie I've ever seen. So I think I went into that one ready to be blown away. And I don't know. I think I saw it too late. Even though one of my favorite movies, even though I know it's a bad movie, Airheads, it's one of my favorite movies. If you guys have ever seen that movie,
yeah, let's see
it's definitely just Die Hard, but with band guys. With water pistols. Like, it took a lot from Die Hard.
I'm just sad that you beat me to Airheads. I was hoping I was going to get there first.
We have a whole section on Airheads comparing it to the Die Hard franchise and just kind of skipped ahead.
So the first time you saw Die Hard was only a couple of years ago, right, Tom?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the issue. So this is, I think I may even have mentioned that on the podcast before, but like, you know, my son Kale has said, asked me if he should watch Blade Runner, the original Blade Runner, because he knows I love it. And I'm like, I don't really know. Like, because all the cool stuff from Blade Runner you have seen because it's been imitated and copied and riffed off of so many times that I don't think Blade Runner will have that impact for you until you get to a point where you're sort of interested in how things develop and you're interested in all that kind of stuff. Then you might want to go and see like the movie that brought a lot of that into cinema. And I think he's probably about at the age now where that would actually work for him. But for a long time, I was like, no, I just wouldn't bother with it because I think that's partially kind of what happened with you because Die Hard has been talked up. It has been imitated so many times that there's no way it's going to live up to that expectation. So I can get that. Skid, did you see Die Hard like when it came out in the theater?
No, I actually saw it because I think like a lot of people, I didn't have a lot of interest in it as it was being marketed because they had some trouble with the marketing campaign because people didn't like Bruce Willis really. He was not, I mean, he'd only done one movie. He had only done Blind Date. He was great in Moonlighting, which is one of my favorite shows, But there was also like a more strict line between TV actors and film actors back then, and people still really considered him to be a TV actor. So I was reading like some of the early screenings, trailers that would be shown before movies. Like when Bruce Willis's face would show, people would like scoff like audibly. So it's like, oh, I'm not watching that. So, and I wasn't like a huge like action movie guy either. So it was just like, eh. But I ended up seeing it on video at my grandparents' house later that year, and I fucking loved it. So you saw it on TV, or
was that like a VHS?
I saw it on TV.
So you did see it with Melon Farmer.
No, because that my grandfather had recorded it off HBO, I think. So,
oh, way to throw him. Under the
bus. Is that what it was edited when it was on cable?
Yeah, on cable it was Yippee-ki-yay Melon Farmer,
right? And then in two, it was what you did your call sign today as, right? It was the Mr. Falcon.
It was Yippee-ki-yay Mr. Falcon. Right.
Right. And Falcon is the call sign of the terrorist in two. So like they were like trying to at least they tried to tie it into something. Yeah, like, I mean, it doesn't make any sense. Like why Bruce Willis would know that doesn't work. But
we should just do a whole episode about dubs like that for profanity dubs for network TV. Cause they're so funny. Some of them, oh yeah, that was a good one. That's a good one.
Yeah, I mean, I saw this in the theater. I was in junior high or middle school, whatever that's called nowadays. I was in junior high, and my mother, I think, let my brothers take me to see it. Or maybe we all went as a family because they'd heard it was so good. But we definitely didn't see it like opening weekend. And then we all loved it. And by we all, I mean my mother and my brothers. My dad didn't care for it. Yeah, and then so I was like super pumped for Die Hard 2, which I really liked the first time I saw it. And watching Die Hard 2, so my older brothers were like allowed to go sit by themselves, but like I had to sit by my mother because she heard it was more violent. And she was sort of off put by all the violence. But the only time she reacted like to cover my eyes was which was not a thing that she normally did, but she tried in this one case. It was when the plane actually crashes and explodes on the runway. And I didn't have much of a reaction to that, apparently. And my mother was like really like upset when we left the theater that I was not like sad or like I didn't have a response to that. And so I think she thought I was a sociopath. And like I remember like listening to her like talk about why it was important that I react to that and like all this sort of stuff, and like she got through this whole, I mean, it was a really, mom, if you're listening, it was a really good speech, but she got to the end of it and I was like, yeah, but mom, like fiction, like I understand what fiction is, so like when that happens in real life, yes, I'll be upset by it, but you know, but yeah, fiction, I'm okay.
If I was watching this on the news, I'd be way more effective.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It was just kind of, you know, it was an interesting bit, but yeah, so I was super pumped for Die Hard 2 and I loved it when it came out. I really dislike that one now, but yeah. And then I was, you know, less pumped for Die Hard 3, but then I just really enjoyed it. But Die Hard 2, because by the time Die Hard 3 came out, cause there's a significant amount of time there. By the time that third one came out, my opinion of Die Hard 2 had changed to where I didn't care for it all that much. And so when Die Hard 3 came out, I wasn't that into it anymore. And you know, my expectations were lower. And so I kind of rolled with it and had fun. And then it was kind of like, ah, so this is where we are now. We're just like, we just don't care about physics or chemistry or logic or whatever. And like, at that point you're just like, okay, it is what it is. And I just took it for what it was worth and kind of had fun. But you know, it is interesting because Die Hard 3 you know, was not originally written to be a Die Hard movie. Mm-hmm. You know, it was supposed to be and it kind of run around and was kind of going to be this, and it was going to be that, and then it was going to be this other thing, and then eventually it became this. And I think that shows they injected Die Hard elements into it, which I think more or less worked. But yeah, I think that's kind of it starts to show. I mean, I think the franchise is fraying heavily by that point.
Yeah, actually, yeah, it was originally written as a project for Brandon Lee.
Yeah.
And yeah, Zeus was supposed to be a woman, and yeah.
Yeah, that whole background is really interesting.
I know what a TV dinner feels like.
So, back to the first film, do you think it was one thing or a combination of things why it's remembered so well and why it's still talked about?
There's actually, I was looking at it this morning, there's this guy, Max Reed, who does a Substack, like a Tumblr, and he recently wrote an article about 90s dad thrillers, which is a genre that he kind of came up with, defined. And it's all the kind of like Tom Clancy stuff. Well, like they say, like unarguably the first dad thriller was Hunt for Red October. That kind of like was the first pure dad thriller, according to him. But he puts it back, the origins of the dad thriller, to Die Hard. And one of the things that he defines a dad thriller on is they have, this is the first sort of evolution of action heroes not being invincible. Like in most of these movies and like the Tom Clancy stuff, like Jack Ryan is he's a desk jockey, you know. That's a lot of like scientists and lawyers and stuff being the protagonists of these action movies. And I think where he's a cop, John McClane, he's still vulnerable. Like he's fallible. And I think that's one of the things that makes this movie as good as it is. He's just like a guy who's a just enough skill to be in the right place at the wrong time and foul up a pretty brilliant plan, it seems like. I think that's a big reason like why it made as much impact as it did. And also, I mean, Alan Rickman, Hans Gruber is one of the best villains ever. It's an incredible villain, incredible performance. It was really his first movie. I think he came out of the theater, and yeah, just that and like an incredibly strong script combined to make for a classic.
Yeah, that's a lot of what I was thinking about in terms of sort of the adult nature. And by adult, I don't just mean violence. Like it's, you know, McClane is scared in the first one, and he's trying to find help. He spends the first half an hour at least like running around, like trying to get the fire department, trying to get the police to come, trying to do all that sort of stuff. He does not want to like charge in guns blazing, and he knows that he can get hurt and that he can die, and he knows the situation is volatile and reacts accordingly. And so, yeah, sort of the comparison to Hunt for an October, I think is a really good one. For that reason, because that's one of the things that I would say is this is the first action movie that I recall, you know, where your hero is a guy that you kind of feel for and you worry about. You don't worry about John McClane in any of the sequels, really.
No. None of
you know he's going to get out just fine. I mean, Die Hard, Live Free or Die Hard is incredibly laughable. It's just like how many bullets fly near him. But never hit him.
All these movies, everyone has unlimited ammo.
Yeah.
But I think...
Well, no, not the first one.
Oh, yeah. The first one very much.
Not the first one. Yeah. That's a big key. Yeah. He only has two bullets left by the end.
You know, I think that... So I agree with everything that you were just saying there, Skid. And about Alan Rickman, about the villain, because he is a villain that is really interesting and intriguing, and he's not physically threatening, which typically they were, you know, much more physically imposing and like in your face and bravado sort of stuff. And he's a much more cerebral villain, which made him scarier, frankly. The concept behind the film, I've got this movie poster framed in my basement, you know, 40 stories of sheer adventure, where it's, you know, it's confined. And that concept got sort of galvanized with Die Hard, so that, you know, all these action movies afterwards were described as Die Hard on a plane, bus, skateboard, trolley, whatever.
Yeah. Speed, Die Hard on a bus.
Right.
Like, yeah, that became like a log line.
Under Siege was Die Hard on a battleship.
On a boat.
Yeah. Speed 2 was also Die Hard on a boat.
Right.
Yeah, and so like it is all of those things, but I think it really is the the intelligence and the care taken to make the characters feel real and the situation feel real, and the characters being fallible, all that stuff. I mean, obviously the casting had to be right, and it's really interesting how great a foil, like, really John McClane is to Hans Gruber.
Yeah.
because in any scenario, I would put my money on Hans Gruber. He's got everything well thought out. He's financed. He's smarter. He's got it all. He's the man with a plan. And John McClane is flying, by the seat of his pants the whole time, and manages to do just enough harm to get the whole thing to fall apart. Mm-hmm. And then that changes, I think, after the first one. What about you, Tom? Did you think there was something specific about Die Hard 1? I mean, you don't even like that movie, so I don't even know why we're talking.
Enjoyed it. I think if I would have saw Die Hard 1 when it came out, the scenes when people get killed and it's graphic, it shocked me a lot more in Die Hard 1 than any of the other movies. I didn't see it coming, and it was kind of gruesome. It reminded me of Joker a few years ago, that movie, like when those killings were like, oh, wow, I can't believe they just shot that person's head off. Mm-hmm. That happened in Die Hard 1, where I bet that would have blown my mind if I saw it when I was like 10 years old. But in all the rest, you're just waiting for that. And all the rest, like you said, they're just over the top. And that takes away from all of that anticipation and all of the almost like a jump scare, because you don't see it coming.
Yeah. And I think that, I know I'm kind of moving into question three here, but I think everything we were just talking about, we can see that even starting at Die Hard 2, a lot of that was thrown out the window. And there are like other movies that even conceptually, Die Hard on a whatever stick closer to Die Hard than Die Hard sequels do. And John McClane, is different. Like, they just, all of these elements fall apart. And I know in sort of our next episode, we're going to talk about character completely. But if you were to just go, hey, they made five Die Hard films all in a row, they were all done at the same time, then you would look at that and be like, they have no idea what they're doing. They don't know what any of this is. The character doesn't seem the same. The situations are different. Like I don't know. Looking back at the five and looking at what the franchise is now, I don't know how to define this franchise outside of what Die Hard 1 was, right? The rest of them all are just kind of dumb summer popcorn action movies, and some are more entertaining than others, but none of them seem to even really try to be anything beyond, hey, we have a name, a title that will sell tickets, so put something out that's halfway decent and everything will be fine.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Did either of you get the feeling in A Good Day to Die Hard, it felt more like a Bond movie, or they were trying to make it be a Bond movie, or just the music and the opening scene, it just didn't feel like a Die Hard movie at all to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think they lose track of who this character is really supposed to be, who the protagonist is supposed to be. Yeah, he gets turned into a kind of like almost a James Bond. And that's why, like, I enjoy these things like less and less as they go. That's a big reason why. But yeah, it bears almost no resemblance to the original kind of concept, I think, at that point.
Right. Well, they all, whether or not, and we'll argue this point, I think, in the next episode, whether or not they all feel like John McClane, the same character or not, aside, the others at least attempted to have something of character development. Like in the fifth film, there's a scene where he's being awesome and tough and he's shooting a target, and somebody comes in and is like, hey, your son's in trouble. He's like, okay, then I'll go to Russia. And then he goes to Russia. He creates a massive international incident that leads to nuclear war. But nobody bothers to tell a story about that part. And like when he meets his son, they like, he and his son like never really do reconcile. Like, I mean, they pay kind of lip service to it. There's the worst scene in the film, which is there are several contenders, where he's like talking to the other guy with a daughter that's involved in all this, and he's like, yeah, like, I love my son, but I don't know how to tell him that. And then, like, the son, like, overhears that from around the truck, the other side of the truck. Yeah. And then later his son is like, I love you, Dad. And, like, that's it. That is the entire character development for the entire film. That is all that is given to them for character. And,
well, they do kind of bond over a shared love of shooting people over the course of the film.
that is true, you know. And I just whew. But yeah, I mean, you look at that movie and you're like, there's nothing here that resembles any of the other movies. I mean maybe there's a plot twist at the end. There was one actor that was trying, God bless him, the villain. He was trying.
Yeah.
And he was pretty good, but like you're in a movie where no one else is trying. Mm-hmm. You know, and so like, but I can't say that like, oh, there's a plot twist at the end of Act Two. Like that's not a Die Hard staple. That's a movie making staple. So like even that doesn't, there's nothing in that one that makes me feel like it's Die Hard. Although clearly I'm aware it's Die Hard because I'm crying at what happened to this franchise.
Thanks for listening to Franchise Fan Guys. Die Hard, episode 1 of 4. Please write a review and give a 5-star rating wherever you listen to podcasts. Intro music by Tom Breifogel and John Harvey. To connect, visit franchisefanguys.com, @franchisefanguys on Instagram, and @guysfranchise on Twitter. Franchise Fan Guys.